Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Well, you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back?
I just wanna let you know. Yeah, get off of my back and into my game. Get out of my way and out of my brain. Get out of my face and get your best shot.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds. And if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench. And we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
And welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is tax day, April 15th, 2019. And it is 2 days after the Bataan Death March. Yeah, I told you we were going to go on our little hike here the other day, and we did. Hang on just a second here. All right. I told you what I wanted to do. First off, let me check and make sure everything's working. I know I do this every single show, but as sure as I don't, something's going to happen. It's not going to work right. It's not recording or something. So let me check and see if we have sound here, and we'll get on with it. Got a few things I want to talk about. We want to get this other this training. Thank you, Nan. She says we're 5x5 there, so. I want to get this training thing out of the way first. I don't know how long it's going to take exactly, but I just kicked the cat in the head by accident. I told you what I wanted to do is to just kind of a research type thing. I want to find out exactly what someone in my condition can do walking in a day's time. Not really hurrying, but not wasting any time either. You know, with walking with a purpose, but not racing. So, started out, I wanted to take just enough, I wanted to take water. I wanted to take, moleskin, the first aid stuff, blowout kit, carried a weapon, and some survival tabs. And that's about it. I had 22 pounds. In my backpack there. So all together, counting my everyday carry, my EDC, I had 35 pounds altogether is what I was carrying. So we started off at 8 o'clock in the morning in Sholo and decided that we would walk, for 8 hours. We'll see how far we got. And we only had... we had four. A couple of them didn't show up. And so we had four guys that started out there. And we had one lady. She was our nurse. She had no intention of even attempting to try to walk the full thing. She just wanted to walk with us for a little while because she wanted to walk. So we... took off from there at 8 o'clock and made our first stop at 6 miles. And at 6 miles, I could tell that I was getting a little bit of a blister on one toe, so I stopped real quick, stuck some moleskin on it. We took a 3-minute break after 6 miles and took off walking again. And we lost our first guy at 9 miles. And I think he may have had some issues at home or something. I don't know what had happened exactly. And we made our next stop at 12 miles. And by the time we got there, I had one guy that was keeping up with me and stayed with me pretty much all the way. And we were on the road, Doc. We're going to do a cross country one here in a couple of weeks. But we were walking down the road. And that was my. I have two purposes, here for research. We're going to do one on the road just to see if we have to take off and go somewhere, and have the leisure of following a road. We want to know how far we can travel. And so at 12 miles, we stopped, took a 10-minute lunch break, and all I had was survival tabs. I ate 3 survival tabs, and. Got a drink of water, rested for a minute, and took off again. By the time we took off, the third guy that was behind us was just almost to where we were at. He was, maybe 300 yards away. And we took off again. And I told him when we started, I said, if you want to go faster than me, go faster. I'm not going to wait for anybody, and I don't expect you to wait for me. I'm setting the pace, and I have to do this to see what I can do, what somebody in my condition can do. And that's with a semi-blown out knee and
a little bit of a week back. So, so we took off again, and I lost the last guy at, right at, let's see, it was just before, between 16 and 17 miles. And, I kept going after that, and I went, 21.6 miles, got to my driveway on the back roads out here, and it just happens to be 21.6 miles. And I was 15 minutes short of my 8 hours, but that was close enough. I had just about had it by that time. So I did 21.6 miles in 7.75 hours. And, so that was a, I think that was an average of, I don't remember, I think it was 2.79 miles an hour. I kept up a little over three up until, 15 miles. And right at 15 miles is when I started slowing down. And, so I was doing good, or up to 6 miles, I was doing 3.34 miles an hour, I think it was. And then we were still at 15 miles. We were almost exactly 3 miles an hour. And then I lost the last guy at 17 miles. No. Yeah, just before 17 miles. And I did another 17, 18, 19, 20, another 4 miles, 4.5 miles after that. So what did we learn all this? Well, we learned a lot. We learned to, you know, what you can expect to be able to carry in that length of time. Now, when I was in basic training, we carried, you know, 25 or 30 pounds, or a little, maybe a little more than that, I don't remember, for 20 miles. And that was a little easier when I was 26 years old. But now we're learning to keep the bare essentials, and what, you know, every ounce that you put in there starts telling on you after a while. Now, I did pretty good. My shoulders are a little tender, but not sore. I can feel it if I stretch a little bit. The biggest problem that everybody had was their legs. And it was, I think that everyone thought pretty well that it was just walking. You know, you can walk, you know, forever, I guess. Well, maybe not so much. That was the major complaint, was legs. And, my legs, I had, the problem with my, Amy brought me a knee brace. Right at halfway, about 10 miles, she brought me a knee brace. I was going up a couple of hills there, and it was all I could do to get up there. My knee went out a little bit, and going uphill was hard as hell. It just hurt like crazy. So she brought me a knee brace, and that solved that. It was much easier to do after that. But the problem is, and I didn't realize it until the next day, I wondered why one leg was so much sore than the other. My right leg wasn't really that sore. It was a little tender, but not bad at all. But my left leg was trashed. Well, and I realized after that because my left leg was carrying my right, you know, I was favoring my right leg, and so my left leg was working a little harder. And if you think that doesn't make a difference after 20 miles, it makes a difference. And my calf was so sore, but the right leg was fine. A little on the tender side, but it was okay. So if I could have walked normally, it wouldn't have been a bad trip at all. But by the time I get to 21 miles, my legs were about give out. Plus I could tell that I had a couple of blisters forming on the bottom of my foot. And so I went as far as I could go. And what we had with one guy there, the guy that stayed with me the longest, he's young, and well, I say young. He's 20 years younger than me, so it's young. Excuse me. Goodness. Hold on a minute. Stand by. And we're back. So he's like I was when I was younger. He's a little stubborn, and I said, you know, you better. He got to 12 miles. No, it was before that. He realized he had a blister. Oh, I know when it was. When we stopped and I put my knee brace on, changed socks at 10 miles. That's another thing. If you're going to walk that far and you have the option, make sure you bring socks. Change your socks. I don't care how tough you are. Change your socks. If you've only brought one, make sure the other pair gets dried out and clean them as well as you can, and change them again, as you need to. But that is critical. So we got there, and he realized he had the blister, and I said, well, did you put some moleskin on it? And he said, no. Then we got to 12 miles is when we took the 10-minute break for lunch. So it was, let's see, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 10 minutes. Yeah, I took 2 3-minute breaks and 2 10-minute breaks. And so we got there at lunch, and I said, did you put some moleskin on those blisters? And he says, no. He says, I'm just stubborn like that. Okay, here's the deal. I understand completely the whole stubbornness thing. But understand this, you got away with it this time because it was just a research, fun, leisurely type thing. If your group is depending on you, you put however tough and stubborn you are, that's fine. If you have to be that way, if you have to do it, that's great. But if you don't, and you have the opportunity to doctor these things up and take care of it, if you don't, you become a liability not just to yourself, but to your group, whether it's a family group or a militia group or a survivalist group or whatever you think, whatever you are. So it's not a matter of being stubborn. It's not a matter of being tough. It's a matter of being smart. Change your socks. If you notice a little tender spot coming up somewhere, put some moleskin on it. And the blister, you'll nip it in the bud. The blister won't happen. Make sure your feet are dry and relatively clean as you can. And put that moleskin centered over the tender spot there, and that blister won't see the light of day. These blisters can get infected. They can slow you down. They can hurt you. They can ruin you the next day. It's not a small deal. It's extremely important that you take care of those feet. The most important thing, I don't know about the most important thing, but one of the most important things to take care of is your feet when you're out in the field. No matter whether you're hunting or patrolling or foraging for food or whatever you might be doing, just doing a hike for the fun of it. You've got to take care of those feet. Without feet, you're going to have a hard time getting home. And you could, in a longer term situation where you had to hurry, and so you could actually wind up getting so bad that you had to have a foot amputated. If you get that infection bad enough, because you didn't take care of your feet. Once they start getting infected, once those blisters start bleeding and carrying on, you've waited too long. Now, I understand if you're in a situation where, walking across Germany with the 7th Infantry or whatever it was, I understand that there's times when you have to do what you have to do. But if that's not the case and you have the opportunity, you better take care of your feet. You can carry a couple of wet wipes, wipe your feet down, clean them a little bit, let them dry, Let them get a little air, change socks, and you'll be a whole new person when you start out again. So that is critical. And like I said, this was all about learning. So we're gonna talk about that the next time we get together, and so everybody understands what we're doing there. So the carrying the weapon wasn't a big deal. You know, you can swap shoulders and do the field carry where you just carry in your hands once in a while. So you've got like six different ways that you can carry it there and give yourself a little bit of a break as you're going along. And that wasn't a big deal at all. But the whole idea was, we had a pickup behind us with the lady I told you to begin with that walked with us for a little while. Her and another guy, a very, very dear friend of mine, were following us. She's got a lot of medical experience. She's been in that field, her whole life. And so she brought some medical stuff and water and everything, and they kind of leapfrogged in the pickup. They'd get up far as they could go and still keep us in sight. They had a radio. We all had radios. So if anything happened, we could get assistance right away. And we got almost done there, and he said, do you want to put that rifle in here and let me carry it? I was the last one by that time. He said, do you want me to carry it for you? And I said, nope. This is the whole deal. This is what I got to do to find out, if I was doing this for real, I'm not going to be able to hand my rifle off to somebody. I can't put my backpack in the back of the pickup. It's not a matter of whether I make it that far, whether I keep shucking enough gear and clothes and whatever I need to do to make it that far. What I need to do is figure out if I can, how far I can make it with all that stuff. Because if I'm going to, pick up medicine in the next town and have to walk back, or we're just bugging out, getting away from people, you've got to know what you can do now. Now, here, let's get back to the fitness thing. What got me started, I've been thinking about this for a long time, but I really got urgent with it here a couple of weeks ago. I was looking at a Facebook page called Ready Men. And someone mentioned something about an EMP or, a catastrophic power failure. And the question was, what would you do? Well, of course, there's the goofy ones that are not serious to start with. They'd say, oh, I'd drink all my beer before it got hot. And, I never did get a serious answer out of them. And most of the people seem to think that they would be at work, and some of them would be at home. The ones that were at work or out of town or whatever, their primary concern was getting home. Okay, I understand that, not a problem. The ones that thought they would be at home said they're bugging out. And I'm thinking, where are you bugging out to, and why are you bugging out? Just so because you don't have power, what's the situation around you? Do you have a big metropolitan area close by and you're afraid you're going to get overrun right away? That's a legitimate concern. But if you're, out somewhere and away from town and, you've got some time to make some plans and get things together, you don't just have to grab a backpack and take off right then. So there were some of them talked about being as much as 45 miles away. Some of them were all the way across the country, but some of them were as much as 45 miles away, and they said, well, I've got this, that, and the other in my truck, and I'm going to get to my truck, grab that stuff, and start walking. Okay, well, maybe so. Have you been, not a single one of them mentioned anything about any training or any practice, or they've thought about this and they've done it a time or two or anything. Not one single person mentioned that. And there was like, 130, 150 replies on there. It was a long, big, long thread. And so, and it really, really made me think, if something like this happens, and here we have sat on the couch and watched TV and played games and done all this stuff waiting for the EMP, and then when it happens, well, you're just going to pack up and walk 45 miles. Well, look around you. When you go to work tomorrow, look at the people around you. What kind of shape are they in? I tell you, round is a shape. I grant you that. But I've seen most of these people probably couldn't make 5 miles. I dare say that there's a sizable percentage of them that couldn't make 2 miles. Especially not carrying anything. And we get back to my discussion here the other day about EDC. You know what? If you did have to leave right away, what do you have on you to help you get out of Dodge right then and get to wherever your gear is or get to your vehicle or get to your home or whatever you need to do? So, it learned a lot on this. It was a fairly cool day. We started out with, we showed up out there in jackets. I think it was 38, 39 degrees, something like that when we showed up. But the sun was shining. There was no breeze. And I thought, you know what? This long sleeve shirt, I don't think this is going to work out. So I changed shirts. I went prepared to do that because we had to drive, 20 miles to where we were going to start. So I went prepared to change. I took a jacket, a long sleeve shirt, and a short sleeve shirt. So I opted for the short sleeve shirt, watched the weather real close. What I did not do is carry a jacket with me. So if a storm would have come up, I'd have been screwed. Actually, I could have got on the radio and had a jacket coming to me most Ricky Tick. But I did have a space blanket in there in an emergency. So, then we took off walking and it was plenty warm. Then it cooled off a little while after, halfway through or so. It got pretty chilly just for a little bit. There was snow on the ground all the time we were walking. It just snowed day before yesterday. Snowed Friday. Snowed like crazy. So there was still snow on the ground. So when the wind would come up, it would get a little bit fresh. And Doc, you're absolutely right. You can make 45 miles easily doable in 2 days. Matter of fact, the recon guys, part of your training is you have to do 50 miles in 24 hours. And if you can't, you got to do it again. I think that is easy to do if you're in pretty good shape and depending on what you're carrying and everything. They were carrying like 45 pounds. But that's a whole nother story there. Yeah, that's a fact, Doc. Doc says most city guys are scared in the woods and don't sleep too well, so they wake up exhausted in the morning. We'll carry this a little bit farther. I've got something else I want to add to this in a minute. So if you'll bear with me a minute, I didn't have my break prepared as usual. So if you'll stay with me here, we'll get that taken care of. How about let's do this one again. All right. I'll be back in a
minute. I'll be back.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
Irony and its close cousin absurdity meet nowhere closer than at the confluence of left-wing politics and gun control legislation. As usual, and especially in the case of guns, the leftists tug at the fragile heartstrings of emotion when the sturdy rope of reason escapes them. This has been seen nowhere more clearly than in the aftermath of Adam Lanza's Sandy Hook school shootings. Samuel Johnson once famously said, "Patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels." He was wrong. I've come to realize that children are the last refuge of scoundrels. Anytime the political left wants to grandstand on an issue, they justify it with the now hoary cliche, "It's for the children." Their gun-free school zones ensured that the Sandy Hook kids didn't stand a chance. Apparently, the anti-gunner's concern for children is further bolstered by continuous misuse of the firearms vocabulary. Their insistence on referring to magazines as clips, the constant reference to semi-automatic firearms as automatics, thereby implying that they are machine guns, and calling cartridges bullets are just a small sampling of their shallow understanding and intentional misdirection. Too often, they are people who don't know what they're talking about, yet wield massive amounts of authority. Their abject technical ignorance would be more palatable were it not being used to strip Americans of their rights. People would laugh at a cardiologist who called the heart that blood pump thing in your elbow that goes thump thump. Yet the anti-gun types are still taken seriously after they say equally ridiculous things. Amongst other things, the 1994 assault weapons ban contained a prohibition on barrel shrouds. While attempting to get the ban reinstated after its 10-year sunset provision, perennial anti-gun New York legislator Carolyn McCarthy was asked what a barrel shroud was. She infamously replied, "I believe it's a shoulder thing that goes up." Barrel shrouds are nothing more than small heat shields designed to protect a shooter's hand from a hot barrel. They are a safety feature. Some, though not all, have a military appearance, but none of them affect the function of a firearm in the least. Leave it to the left to ban safety features. The ban featured other bizarre prohibitions, such as bayonet lugs on rifle barrels. These fixtures allow a bayonet to be mounted on a long gun. In modern militaries, bayonets are rarely seen off the parade ground. Still, the nervous Nellies who authored the ban insisted on including them. Why? Did the authors suspect that our criminal element was massing, like World War II Imperial Japanese troops, ready to stage bayonet bonsai attacks? Apply your own litmus test to everything you hear from the mainstream media and anti-gun politicians, and understand that it is impossible for their constant stream of disinformation to be accidental. There are, logically, only three possibilities. They are intentionally pushing an agenda, they are too stupid to hold their offices, or they are too dishonest to be trusted. In any case, their blather is not worthy of your ears. Reports are that December 2012 background checks and firearm sales have broken all previous records. The sad irony is that the public aren't buying these weapons because they fear the likes of Adam Lanza or even common street criminals. They are buying them in fear of their own government. This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
A good rap deal, spit with the best, just don't get your cap here. But I'm from the Wild West with real women and fast steel. It's in my veins, I'ma stick to my guns. Man, I live this all day, lyrics hot as the sun. And don't play your music, but it ain't gonna work though. Nobody wants to hear about them woods and the dirt roads.
Come on, them dirt roads, wind down the mountain and roll out over the plains. Let me tell you, cowgirl, you answer.
Oh, I'm talking about home, and it ain't the Bay City. When I hit them back roads, got my fishing pole with me. You can hunt them like hell up in cowboy heaven. My bag of bull, a couple ringneck pheasants. Still stomping bone, chilling mountain man music. We don't need to flash a pistol, we don't even need to use it. We're quick to handle business, using just what God gave us. You can try to come and test us, but we're battling like you.
To make their play, and the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas red and not red leather, for a bullet fairly ripped, and the Ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip, big iron on his hip.
Okay, we're back. We did this one time back, it was probably 4-5 years ago, something like that, at least 4 years ago. We took a group of people out to, out in the woods, and we said, okay, we made a little contest out of it, and we, told them this is what you need to do. You need to come and, take your minimal amount of gear, whatever you think you need. We told them, we insisted that they take their weapon and water, and keep it light, whatever food they wanted to carry, and a compass, and of course the map and everything. And we took them about, I think it was by road, I think it was 6 miles away from camp. So it was probably, no, it was farther than that. I think we figured out on the map that they had to walk 6 miles through the woods. So we took them up there to a road, up the road a piece, and turned off and went back in the woods. We dropped them off like, 500 yards apart going down this road. And we had the map and their compass, and they said, okay, this is what you got, and you need to get to camp as quick as you can. And naturally, the one that gets there first wins. But the deal was that you are to have no contact with each other. You are to do your best not to be seen. You could have no contact with any outside parties. And you can stop, and you can't follow the road. You need to go as straight as practicable, following your compass there. So, and we dropped them off just before dark. They had to do this at night. And it was, and they all had radios, and they all had flashlights. And it was pretty interesting. The first guy, when we got back to camp after dropping them off, the first guy called us on the radio, and he was sick. He was deathly ill and asked if we'd come get him. Well, we come to find out he was scared, is what it was. And it had started getting dark, you know, before he dove off that hill right at the start there. And he was scared to death. And whether he got sick because he was scared or just said he was scared, said he was sick because he was scared, I don't know what which one it was. But anyway, we had to go get him. The other guy turned into a full-fledged, honest-to-goodness search and rescue mission. We didn't find him until 3 o'clock the next afternoon. And he, once in a while, he'd call on the radio, and we'd hear a little bit. He'd be down in a hole or something. He wouldn't go up and get on top of a hill and just sit still. He kept confounding everything by continuing to try to move and talk on the radios. We were 3 o'clock the next day finding him. We spent the whole day looking for this guy. The other one was my son. He arrived at camp right at daylight the following morning. And he still had the warrior spirit in him when he got there. He got there at daylight and he tried to sneak up on us. The guy that was up and happened to be looking that way was a extremely experienced hunter, guide, and just happened to notice that something wasn't right in the bushes over there, and he caught him. But nevertheless, you know, he got there at 5:30 the next morning, yeah, which was a pretty, no small feat when you consider all this was a minimal amount of gear and traveling in the dark with map and compass. And he would go a little while, he'd stop and sit down and put his back up against a tree and lean against a tree and kind of doze off for a little bit and rest a little and keep going. And so obviously he won by a long shot, and the other guys didn't. We did this again on another exercise one time, and we had a guy that was a former Marine, at least he says he was, and we did the same thing with him, except it was over at another campsite about, I don't know, 6 or 8 miles, 10 miles up the road. And he had much easier. The first guys had a hell of a canyon to cross and had a water crossing. And it was tough for civilians. It was tough. And this other guy had much, much easier traveling. The difference was, though, number one, he didn't have anybody with him. He, of course, the other guys, for all practical purposes, didn't either, because they were instructed to travel alone, have no contact with each other. And but the only thing was, with the other guy, it was raining. Boy, did it rain. But, you know, it was cloudy. We thought that was a possibility, and he said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to show him I can do it. Okay, we'll take you up there. Here you go. Gave him his map and compass and everything. We got back to camp, and I mean, it bottom fell out of it, and it rained bad. Well, he got lost. He was smart enough to go out towards the road and finally got out there and found somebody with a phone. Actually, there was a phone booth at the place. There was a little store out there, the top of the hill, you know, 10, 11 miles from where we were at. He went completely the other way and come out at that store. So, anyway, that's what we do with our spare time in this part of the country when we've got nothing better to do. And, but, you know, we want our family and our friends and our group, you know, to be somewhat prepared for something that we feel very strongly is coming at some point. You know, and, you know, I've been saying this for what, 10, 11, 12, 13 years, whatever it's been now, 14 years. And I still feel that it's, you know, getting closer all the time. I've cried wolf and said that I thought it was going to happen in the next year or two for the last 10 years, but it, the closer we get, the more people there are that are thinking the way I'm thinking that we're getting. I was talking to some guys today at the tire shop, actually, and they are of the notion that something's going to happen this year. Well, it might. It sure might. But if that this year, next year, 5 years from now, ideally, I wish it wouldn't happen at all. But I've pretty much give up on that idea and have resigned myself to the fact that there is no way around this. I've told you before, I think we've passed the point of no return, and something is going to happen relatively soon. So with that being the case, if that's the case, then shouldn't we make some attempt, some feeble little try, just a little bit, to have the physical ability to do something if something happens? If we have to walk along, if you break down out somewhere and you have to get out of, you know, you may have a radio, but you may be as far up the mountains that it doesn't work. You're up in the mountains and the cell phone doesn't work. You're up in the mountain when the EMP hits, whatever the case may be. You may have to depend on your own ingenuity and the gear that you have and your physical abilities to save your life or that of your family. Why would you not make some attempt to do that? We have gone through this and tried this numerous times. I shouldn't have said tried this. Not anything we've tried. It's something that we've continued to work on with small hikes and runs and even the treadmill. You know, you can exercise in your living room, in your garage. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. You don't have to be Jack LaLanne. But you should probably try to get rid of the little bit of extra baggage you've got, if you've got any, and make some attempt to be able to take care of yourself. That's entirely up to you, but it's common sense as far as I'm concerned. Anything from the house burning down to the car breaking down to any number of inconveniences or tragedies that you can think of, it just doesn't seem to me like it's too much to ask to spend a little bit of time working on this. Doc, that's funny. Figure the bear sees you sleeping in a space blanket, he'll figure it's an extra large sandwich wrapped in aluminum foil. Yeah, that is funny. So anyway, let me go over here. I've had all the fun I can stand with the hike there now. We do plan, like I said, we're going to do this again soon. And the next one's cross country. We've got some overnighters coming up just to kind of get the feel of what it's like out. And we're going to do two or three-day overnighters here in throughout the summer, and do one in the fall when it's cooling off, and we plan to do another one, at least one winter overnighter before, you know, hopefully we get all this done before the poop hits the fan here. So there you have it. That's what we're going to do. Let's see. I do have some things, a few stories. We're getting short on time, so I'm just going to do a headline blitz here. There is a, let me see if I can find out. I think I told you the one already. I believe I told you this one where the No, I didn't either. This is the congressman here thinks that rocks falling into the ocean, not the climate, but rocks and dirt and stuff sliding in the ocean are causing the seas to rise. No, it's not Hank Johnson, but it's Hank Johnson's white brother that thinks this is going to happen. If Guam capsizing doesn't raise the ocean, then I don't suppose rocks falling in there either. There was a university police department chief was suspended for liking tweets that it was pro Trump tweets and tweets on I don't remember what the other one was. I think it was some gun related stuff. Anyway, he was suspended for liking these things. The First Amendment is absolutely gone. It's not there anymore. Let's see, we talked about that. I'll talk about that some other time. The ACLU has helped here. Oddly enough, we've seen them jump in a time or two over things that kind of surprised me, and this is one of them. There were some, the school hassling some kids, just like that university police chief a while ago, school hassling some kids over some pictures that they'd posted on their own Facebook page while they were at the range. They were out having fun and shooting, and the school been hassling them. Well, the ACLU has jumped in there and is suing this school for their hassling these kids, which I think is awesome. If any of you have broken down and gotten Alexa, you may not want to talk too much when you're around it. They say that there are thousands of Alexa employees listening now to, or Amazon employees, I'm sorry, listening to Alexa conversations. Statistically, you're probably not real likely to be one of the ones that they're listening to, but you never know. That's one of the problems we've had with Alexa since it was, since it first came out. Let's see. Son shoots home invasion suspect in the head while sisters hide in a closet. This was in Houston, Texas. There was another one real similar to that happened in Phoenix just a few days ago. Here is a, I'm not even going to do that. That one's ugly. I may do it some other time. Let's see. I find this very interesting. The court has found Illinois Housing Authority gun ban illegal. You know, we've talked about numerous housing developments and apartment complexes and stuff that don't allow guns in there. And we've always talked about that being a blatant violation of the Second Amendment. Well, even in Illinois, you know how many things have come up in Illinois favorably to the Second Amendment here in the last year or 2 years? Here's another one. They've found the Housing Authority ban on that illegal and have put the quietus to it. A million plus high-cap magazines flooded into California after the ban was lifted. That ban only lasted, what, maybe a week? And there are 3 or 4 days, it wasn't very long. And they said over a million magazines flooded into California. What I want to find out is how they intend to distinguish which ones came in now. What are they going to do? How are they going to how are they going to determine whether these came in after the ban was lifted or pre-ban or whatever? They're not marked anymore. So, I don't know. That seems like that's going to cause a little bit of a logistical nightmare for California Department of Justice. We'll find out before long. Let's see here. What else we got? We just got a couple minutes. Let me see if I can squeeze another one or two in here right quick. Okay. If I can find one, there it is. Okay, let's go. How come I can't find it? There it is. This was kind of sad and gross and weird and everything. There was a man working. He had managed to get his childhood home through a lawsuit against his father and everything. And he was doing some repairs and found his mother's body. She'd been gone since 1993. And turned out that the father had killed her, and he was a little boy. And he remembers, you know, he didn't have a good enough memory to put the pieces together and get anybody suspicious about it. But he did say that, you know, that daddy had put mommy in time out, or that she'd been bad, or something like that. Well, at time out, he killed her. And this man found her body. So the man was still alive, and he's been charged with murder, and I don't know what is going on after that. That's a brand new story, so kind of interesting. Now, here's something that it should be maybe a little bit concerning to us, only because everybody in Mexico that's not already headed north may be headed north soon. There's they call it Mount Popo. And I can't even pronounce the real name of it, but it's Popo something another volcano. Said they had over 200 eruptions in a 24-hour period. This has all been going on in the last two or three days. And see, Popocatépetl, Cocopatépetl, something like that. Anyway, they have authorities are saying the odds of more volcanic activity are immediate to high. And if a full-blown eruption were to occur, it would be the worst natural disaster in modern history in North America. They said approximately 26 million people live within 60 miles of this crater, and they're talking about death and destruction on a scale that is difficult to imagine. They said this same volcano buried entire Aztec cities with superheated mud, and it's been asleep for about 1,000 years. Unfortunately, they said it started waking up again in the 1990s, and now is the most active that they've ever seen it since the volcano originally awakened. So this could be a serious problem. It says that the volcano is only 35 miles from Mexico City, 20 miles from Puebla, and sent ash and plumes of smoke more than a mile and a half high. Has warned people to keep away from this. They put a 7.5 mile safety radius around this mountain here, around this crater. And they said if it gets worse, they will be forced to begin large-scale evacuations. So, I don't know. This could cause problems Oh, damn, I was going to talk about Bobby. You know, I haven't got all my notes with me. I'm going to tell you about Bobby here real quick, though. Bobby is still in jail, and he's being charged with two counts of resisting arrest. The pedophile biological father of those kids now has full custody of them, and Bobby and Bridget have lost the parental rights for them to the kids. And this has really taken a turn for the worse. They've lost their house. The house has been was sold in the sheriff's sale. And I've got some notes out in the truck, and dang it, I forgot to bring them in. But I don't know what at this point with the legal issues going on. See, Indiana is a, what do they call it? It's a, this is not the right name, but it's a concern for the child state. I'm not sure what the proper wording is for it. But if there's anything that they consider could be even marginally detrimental to the kids, health, well-being, psychologically, physically, or whatever, then that is points against whoever's trying to get the kids. So with the resisting arrest and the legal struggles and everything, that was still unbelievable to me that this pedophile got custody of the kids. But it is it's how Indiana is. It is police state, DeTinker. Now, not that I ever condoned CPS taking control of the kids. If they were not going to let Bobby and Bridget have them this time, then that's probably what should have happened. At least we already know that they're with pedophiles right now. But we don't know. Now, the stepmother, who is the biological father's wife, doesn't even want the kids. She's very mean to them, doesn't want them around. And I can't imagine what these kids are going through. They've been happy, healthy, been doing real well. I told you all here, it's been quite a while back, a year or so ago, that I told you that Bobby's son died. And tragic situation for the whole bunch down there. But anyway, these kids have all adapted very well, and they've all become one very healthy, happy, productive family. And then the state comes in and tears it all apart. I don't even think it's the state. I think it's the county. Yeah, it is the county that's doing all this. And why they gave that pedophile custody is beyond me. I don't get it. But I have some other notes, and I'm going to spend. I'll catch you up a little bit more detail Wednesday night. I'll make sure I'm going to go out and get those notes and bring them in here at the computer tonight, so I don't forget. And we'll talk about this just a little bit more. So that's what's going on right now. Let me see here if I can do this with one hand. I can. How about that? That was pretty awesome. Okay, I'm getting out of here. I'll be back Wednesday. I'm sorry that Amy was not able to make it tonight. She's taking care of a elderly lady over here, kind of a welfare check type thing. When there's got some chores that need done and things like that, well, Amy goes over and takes care of that for her. So that's why she was not on her show tonight. Worked in town the biggest part of the day. Doc, Bobby's son died of it was a natural death. It was something with his heart or something. I can't remember exactly, but he literally died in Bobby's arms in the living room of their house in Mount Vernon, Indiana. It's been now, oh hell, probably 5 or 6 years ago or more. No, not that long. I don't remember how long it's been. I talked about it on the show the day after Bobby told me, that week anyway. Okay, we're running over a bit, so I'm going to get on out of here, and we will see you all Wednesday, and I will have some more details for you so we can get you caught up a little better. And we'll see you then.
Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.